Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Shroomed Podcast. Today we have founder of MicroBoost, a functional mushroom brand, Robert Johnson. He's also been an integral part of the psychedelic space in the last few years. Welcome to the Shroomed Podcast, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm really excited to talk with you. Love talking mushrooms.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So tell us a little bit about MicroBoost, what you guys have been doing in the past few years, and we can kind of start from there.
Sure. Yeah, we founded MicroBoost in 2022. It actually came about, we started a supplement soft gel company in 2020, and we had like a company retreat and had a Shark Tank style game. You know, and we split up people. We had salespeople and production people and kind of all mixed them together and put them on different teams. And we had some, you know, like the shark judges, and everybody like pitched different ideas for the company. And one of our best East Coast sales reps and my personal assistant and, you know, like the office manager all came up with MicroBoost. I think their Shark Tank pitch was calling it MicroBoost. Ultimately, we ended up adding the R in there. And so, it was a very collaborative effort. Just running a business, some of the stuff that I've learned is, you know, even the people that are washing your dishes or you know, manufacturing widgets, they're in this every day. And I'm sure they have a lot of thoughts about it. Right. And so just giving them the platform to really be creative and come up with something that, you know, they're really excited about, in this case, really turned out well.
Nice. That's awesome, man. That reminds me of when I was at Zappos, our CEO really gave us like, he gives you the power to really speak your voice. I think that's how like Hot Cheetos started. Like the janitor was the one who started it too. So that's right. Awesome, man. Tell us what kind of sets you apart. I know I visited you guys and got to see some cool machines that you guys had. Tell me a little bit about what sets you guys apart from other companies.
Yeah, great question. So, you know, as part of running this supplement company, we would get approached by different brands all the time that wanted to put whatever ingredient in their product. And oftentimes, you know, with supplements, there's a lot of different trends. And so, you know, you kind of get this wave of people calling, asking about ashwagandha or elderberry or lion's mane was one that kept coming up. And so part of my job as a consultant to come up with formulas for these products is to really do my research and understand, all right, well, if you're going to put ashwagandha in a product, you know, it's supposed to be for, you know, calm or anti-anxiety, anti-inflammation. But, you know, there's a certain amount that you need to really have those therapeutic benefits, right? So I would, you know, do my research and come back, and we make a soft gel capsules, so really small form factor. And so with some ingredients work better than others with soft gels. And for like a powderized ingredient like lion's mane or ashwagandha, I found that the suggested serving size for lion's mane, for example, is like between 800 milligrams and 3000 milligrams on a daily basis. And now to put that much into a single soft gel is impossible. It's challenging. And what I was surprised to learn was a lot of these supplement companies, when I'm telling them like, hey, we can put all these trendy ingredients in there, but it's not going to be enough of any of them for people to really feel something from it. Yeah. And much to my surprise, a lot of these brand owners were like, you know, we just kind of want to have it on there for label claim. You know, we're not trying to hit exactly therapeutic amounts. And it just didn't really make sense to me. You know, I made a bunch of these products for people. But, you know, when you're spending a lot of time, energy, money to acquire new customers, make people aware of your brand, and it just didn't seem to make sense that you're just like banking on them taking this placebo essentially and convincing themselves that that's helping them in some way. Yeah. So, you know, our company, we always kind of like work backwards. We start with like, what is an amazing product that we can make that we would want to take that would be beneficial, you know, for friends and family. and then from there try and form something that could be profitable and great value for the customer as well. And so I think that that's where it started. And so I wanted to work with mushrooms for longer than we actually did, but I wouldn't come out with a product that was going to, you know, either have to take like 10 soft gels to get a good serving of it, or, you know, just taking something that people aren't really going to notice the effects, until I found this company that was doing fruiting body extracts or like concentrations of these functional mushrooms. And then, you know, that math worked out. Now we can put, you know, 1500 milligrams equivalent, because we have this concentrated version of all these mushrooms, into a little soft gel or into like a tablespoon of coffee. We have 3000 milligrams of mushrooms. And so that background in just like formulating and researching is what really got me interested in lion's mane from the beginning, you know, and just learning about, okay, why are all these people asking about it? It's like, well, because it's like a brain enhancing ingredient. And the more I read about it, the more I wanted to work with it and eventually, you know, put it into our own brands. And so I think like one of the other main differences, which, you know, just is still kind of down that line of supplement companies will kind of usually kind of work with like, what's the cheapest product that we can make? And, you know, get it out to people and, you know, charge them the highest price. And so I discovered that in functional mushroom products, there's a couple of different ways that people make them. One is with the fruiting body, right? And the fruiting body is the stem and the cap, or in lion's mane's case, it kind of looks like a cheerleader's pom-pom or, you know, a lion's hair. And when you grow these mushrooms commercially, you grow them on a substrate, you know, some sort of starchy material, oats or grains or corn, and you inoculate that, you know, the mycelium grows throughout the substrate. And then the fruiting body or the stem and cap, you know, is what comes out. So our company, you know, we take those fruiting bodies, make the concentrated version, and then put that in the product. And what I discovered was a lot of the mushroom brands that have been around for a while, they'll take the fruiting body, harvest it, you know, sell it in a farmer's market or some other really high-end product. And then they'll take that myceliated oat substrate mass and pulverize it and then put that into their mushroom capsules or their coffee or whatever the product is. Now, there is benefits to mycelium. You know, it's the root system of a mushroom. There's really interesting studies about, you know, mycelium being able to communicate and even having effects on the body. Right. But the problem is that the majority of what, you know, you're getting in that capsule of myceliated oats is oats, you know? And so it could be the best oats in the world, but, you know, what you're paying for is lion's mane.
Right.
And so that is like a fundamental, like, key difference, you know, not just for our brand, but for all mushroom brands. You want to look at, are they making these products with myceliated oats, or are they making it with fruiting body or fruiting body extracts? And it's really confusing, unfortunately. And, you know, I was in CBD for a long time, and I really don't want the functional mushroom industry to go down the same road as CBD. Right. And what I saw was a lot of people, it was the trendy ingredient, you know, 2017, 2018, all the way through the pandemic, right up to the pandemic. And consequently, a ton of people jumped into the business, made a bunch of products. You know, a lot of brands would have like 12 different types of tinctures, right? And this one's for sleep, and this one's for energy, and this one's for, you know, helping you dream. This one's for not helping you dream. And it's all the same formula.
Exactly.
You
know? Yeah.
Just a different label. Right. And so I think consequently, people heard all this hype about CBD. You know, they go online, buy the first product they see, and then try it. And they're like, you know, I didn't jump out of my wheelchair and, you know, my broken bones healed or whatever claims that these companies made. And then they think like, you know, I guess this CBD is not a good product for me. But I really just think there was just like so much poor quality product out there, really tainted a lot of people's perspective or opinion on CBD. And so That's why I just like want to educate people about functional mushrooms, because, you know, I know that they've done great things for me. A lot of people who buy MicroBoost, and you know, I want mushrooms to be something that are people like adapt or like, you know, add to their daily diet, because I think it could really help.
Definitely, man. I actually offer your MicroBoost coffee exclusively to my community members, and they love that stuff. So, good job on the coffee for sure.
Yeah, thanks. You know, whenever we come up with a new product, I'll order like, you know, the 10 most popular products in that category. And we were making, you know, mushroom coffee every day, you know, trying different brands every day. And one of the things that we noticed was a lot of them just didn't taste great. You know, I mean, I didn't like the taste of coffee when I was 12 years old either, but, you know, eventually became an acquired taste. But this mushroom coffee, like, you're asking people to, in a lot of cases, to switch or subsidize their coffee intake. And if it's going to taste terrible, like, that's going to be a hard switch or a hard, you know, convincing. So we wanted ours to taste really good, not taste like mushrooms. And so we put a bunch of cacao in there. So, you know, we call it a mushroom coffee, but I think it's really tastes more like a mushroom hot chocolate. Yeah. And I think that's why, you know, people subscribe to it and keep coming back. You know, it goes down pretty smooth.
Yeah. And with my recipe, I put a little scoop of some little other functional mushrooms in there to make it extra. Yeah. Good. So that's awesome, man. So last year I went down to Austin, and I didn't get a ticket to South by Southwest because it was just so much, but I got to kind of hang out at little side events. And I saw this last year, I think you spoke as well, but this year you're on a panel coming up at South by Southwest. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm so excited for that. You know, I went to high school in Houston, Texas, and I didn't make it to South by Southwest last year. I haven't been since I was a teenager, but really excited to go back. I'm on a panel with Dennis Walker, who runs the Micropreneur official Instagram feed. He's hilarious, like psychedelic satirist. And then Reggie Harris runs Oakland Hyphae and Hyphae Labs. They were the first lab, you know, testing for amounts of psilocybin and psilocin in Oakland, California. You know, the first city that decriminalized mushrooms. And Mary Carrion is an amazing journalist, she's written a lot about cannabis, but now does the Hyphae Leaks podcast, which is on the Psychedelics Today podcast network, and does incredible journalism about all different types of drugs, including magic mushrooms and cannabis. So it's a nice panel, and the name of the panel is Notes from the Psychedelic Underground.
Nice.
So I'm really excited to talk about this, right? A lot of these conferences are from the pharmaceutical perspective or the medical assisted therapy perspective. You know, tons of, you know, quote unquote psychedelic stuff is ketamine clinics, because that's like the only, you know, real legal one right now across the country. So just having that perspective from the underground, I think, you know, just it resonates to people who have been taking mushrooms for a while, right? We've seen this in cannabis, too. It's just like when it's newly legalized, you know, maybe the lawyer who, you know, hasn't smoked weed in 20 years because of his job, you know, is now like, oh, okay, I'm going to go and try this. But the difference with, you know, the options that are being discussed outside of this, like, quote unquote, like traditional market, the price markup is just really, really wild. You know, I know it's a brand new thing, but, you know, if cannabis, you know, started at $50 an eighth, you know, 15 years ago, when it became like medical, it was still $50 an eighth.
Yeah.
You know, and now, you know, with regulations in California and, you know, maybe you get some top shelf stuff and you pay all your taxes on it, maybe it's $60 an eighth.
Yeah.
Right. But mushrooms, you know, let's just say those are $50 an eighth too. At the assisted therapy, you know, you're talking about $1,500 to $3,500. to consume the same amount. Granted, you got a licensed professional there with you, and you know, I don't want to discredit this as amazing, like breakthrough therapy for some people and the people that could afford it. But I think, you know, what you'll find, and what most of these people will find, even if they do, you know, shell out $3,000 for their first mushroom experience, if they like it, they want to microdose or do this once every few months afterwards, you know, even the people with the deepest pockets, when they realize I could get this chocolate bar online for $50 or delivered to me through Instagram or Etsy or whatever you're doing, you know, it just doesn't seem like a sustainable thing. And already cannabis with that extra $15 on there versus the black market is proving maybe not sustainable either. You know, even California admits like 90% of cannabis sold in California is outside of the legal market that we spent so much time and energy and activism to create. Right. And so, yeah, if all of a sudden it's just like, oh yeah, you can get legal weed, it's only $5,000 an eighth, you know, it would be 99.999% of people that are buying cannabis outside the legal market. So, you know, we have this visual in our presentation coming up for South by Southwest, not really a spoiler, but it's this meme of a, like an entrance to a park, you know, it has like this gate where, you know, you're supposed to wait for the gate to go up to be able to go through. But there's this finely worn footpath that goes just around the gate. Right. And I think it really like that image summarizes, you know, how we're trying to regulate the distribution, the ingestion, whatever of magic mushrooms when, you know, it's just so easy to go right around it. So I think that the audience there, you know, is going to be in for a surprise. And, you know, everybody I think is really, not only really smart, but really entertaining. And they just don't bullshit, you know, they really just, you know, tell people how it is. And I think that, you know, maybe pharmaceutical guys or guys with publicly traded companies, they're aware of this $50 chocolate bar market, but it's not really in their financial interest to talk about it. If they're going to talk about it at all, they'll do the normal sort of stuff like, well, you don't know where that's coming from or right. if you can trust it or if it has fentanyl or, you know, whatever, you know, hidden needle in the Halloween candy kind of urban legend fear tactics. Yeah. So hopefully it's going to be well received. I'm so excited for a big audience and an audience not just of people like at a psychedelic conference, but you know, more mainstream.
Yeah, that's what I'm excited about. It's the more masses that we're getting to in a whole nother area, because I feel like psychedelics, our little circle is still really small compared to what it really could be in the next few years.
It's amazing how fast it is growing in popularity. And, you know, you got to credit those 100 million, multi-billion dollar companies that have been raising all this money and hyping it so much. And, you know, celebrities talking about their mushroom experiences, whether it's Prince Harry or Oprah or you know, the bassist from the Chili Peppers. You know, it's definitely kind of, I think it feels like cannabis legalization 10, 12 years ago, you know, like a rise in mainstream acceptance and awareness and curiosity. So hopefully, you know, it feels like, you know, I've read a lot about the 60s, you know, and the idea that, you know, we're all going to take psychedelics and improve as a society, as a human race, and, you know, stop the war in Vietnam and, you know, treat people of all colors equally. And maybe, you know, 60 years later, we at least get a little bit more right, if not, you know, just evolve into some utopia, although that would be nice.
Yeah, exactly. I will see, man. I hope it doesn't go down that cannabis route. I was talking to someone earlier and they said that someone got a bill for like $3,500 just for one experience. So it's like, man, that's definitely not sustainable for anyone.
Yeah, right. Like Oregon and Colorado are the two states that have this medical assisted therapy. And I read an article just recently that over 90% of the people that are in the queue for therapy in Oregon are from outside the state of Oregon. And I went to college in Oregon, and at the time it was like I think it was one of the poorest states, if not the poorest state in the country, you know, and I had friends with PhDs pumping gas, and they make a law that you can't pump your own gas just so, you know, they have more jobs in Oregon. So, and you know, not to mention too, like Southern Oregon especially is notorious, like the Humboldt of magic mushrooms, you know? So it's silly, I think, for people that, you know, have been doing this for years or decades even, you know, the idea that that anybody would pay thousands of dollars for something that cost, you know, literal dollars to grow.
They're going to find it outside somewhere, find it in a cow patty.
Right.
So what led you on this path? To maybe opening your CBD company? I know that you've done some Rolling Stone articles. Tell us a little bit about your past, like your history.
Yeah, I graduated college in 2008, right into the big recession, right at the end of George W. Bush's term, and moved to LA like the day Barack Obama was elected. I got a degree in creative writing from the University of the College of Santa Fe in New Mexico. Nice. And so, yeah, I moved to LA with a fellow writing buddy, and we started doing all sorts of different stuff. Did a lot of ghost writing. I was working on like this spiritual thriller type novel that was about redwood trees as like an allegory for the family and how redwood trees have an interconnected root system and can share information and nutrients. And, you know, they're not just individual trees, but a larger organism, and, you know, kind of regulate their own ecology. And, you know, that's actually a lot like how mycelium and mushrooms work now. So, you know, a lot of the research and stuff I was doing about, you know, how mushrooms are a similar sort of organism, you know, each little stem and cap is just what is kind of poking through the surface, but the interconnected mycelial network works similar to those redwood trees. It can share nutrients to different parts of forest, work symbiotically with the other trees and plants that are in the forest. Even there was an article in The Guardian a year or two ago about a scientist had discovered that the messages that mycelium are passing resemble human speech. And they even identified like as much as 50 words that mushrooms like talk to each other in. And so, they're really almost like an alien life, or just something that the more I learn about it and read about it, the more I'm just blown away by what we don't know.
Right. That's awesome, man. Go ahead.
You were kind of talking about, you know, how I got started. And so that was how I got started in cannabis. You know, I was writing, and, you know, at the end of the day, my buddy and I would say, you know, it would be really funny if we started an edibles company called I Can't Believe It's Pot Butter. And we were both like kind of comedy writers. And so we just, you know, just joke about that, smoke a joint at the end of the day and talk about all the different pun names and stuff that we could make. And eventually we're just like, we should just try this. And that's how that original brand started. And, you know, there was a ton of dispensaries in LA at the time, and just started going around to those and really building out the brand. You know, people were kind of weary about working with people they didn't know after 8 years of the George W. Bush administration, DEA raids and stuff.
Yeah.
That, you know, it took a while, and we literally like kind of buttered these people up, giving them free brownies, caramel corn and, you know, whatever. Every time we saw them, tell them jokes, working on our material. And then eventually, you know, it's like, are we friends yet? Can we work together? So I did that for years. We sold that company in 2010. and then teamed up with this crazy wild-eyed scientist who was making some of the first like fractally distilled THC oil back in 2009. And, you know, he brought this like clear looking THC oil to us. And he's like, I'm going to sell this for $80 a gram. You know, how much do you think you can help me sell? And I was like, I don't know. Give me a couple of grams and I'll find out. Yeah. And he was so amazed because he, I guess everybody else was just like, oh man, I'll sell $250,000 worth in 1 month. And, you know, made all these promises. And I was really skeptical about it. I didn't know, if people would understand it or want it or pay that high price, but that became Tetra Labs, and we used that clear THC oil to make the world's first THC soft gels. We're one of the first companies to put it into a vaporizer, and we even made this dabbable soft gel. It's like a soft gel with a little nipple tip, and you can squeeze the oil out of it. And so that was a really like kind of cutting edge company. And the guy was from Silicon Valley. He was one of the first employees at Atari. And so he had a really interesting background, smart guy. We branded it well and ultimately sold that company in 2018. Then I did real estate for a minute. I was pretty bored. And I called the CTO of Tetra Labs. I was like, hey, you know, how about this CBD company you've been telling me about? Because, you know, that was right as the hemp farm bill passed, legalizing CBD federally. And yeah, we just started towards the end of Tetra Labs to do white label soft gels for other people, kind of resisted it for a while. But yeah, that was the decision to start custom capsules. Did I lose you?
Oh, that's my bad. All right.
All right. So 2019, we started, raising money and coming up with a business plan for CCC. And then really strategically in early 2020, right as the pandemic was starting, is how we launched. It was a really, tough time for most businesses. But especially ours, because we just started, so we didn't get any of like the COVID relief programs. We just started, fortunately we survived, that COVID pandemic, and we started making a lot of hemp soft gels. Delta 8 became a thing and kind of made CBD a thing of the past. I mean, it's still around, but now that they have this kind of legal loophole of a psychoactive hemp-derived cannabinoid that is technically legal, depending on who you ask, that became a big business for us. And yeah, we were doing a ton of stuff and wanted to do mushrooms. And I think I went to a CBD and psychedelic science conference in Denver, Colorado, right when they decriminalized in Denver. And I went to this panel. And I asked a question at the end because psychedelics had just become legal. And so I just said, does anybody in this room have free samples? I'll trade you, And that accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. Was I just, ended up talking to 50 people and getting some chocolates and some cool stuff. And then got invited to go to this mushroom pop-up event. They're like, are you going to mushroom pop-up event? I was like, I don't know, but yeah, I'll go. And that's where I met Reggie and the Hyphae Labs team. And there was just a bunch of the activists that had been a part of getting the initiative passed. And they admitted, like, they did not expect it to pass in Denver. And it won by like 50.1% or something. Really close. The same day, Denver also criminalized homelessness by like 76%.
Oh my gosh!
But psilocybin, passed or decriminalized anyways. And just when they got invited to a mushroom pop up, I didn't know what to expect. I thought it was maybe going to be like a bazaar and people are selling chocolates and dancing to rave music or whatever. But instead, it was just like a bunch of intellectuals sitting around talking like revolutionaries. I felt like, you know, goosebumps on my arms, and I've kind of been hooked ever since. And, you know, I kind of skipped a part of my history with edibles, but I started a trade association for edibles manufacturers because California was legalized, and it was first on the ballot to legalize in 2010. And edibles were really on the chopping block because bureaucrats, they weren't sure how to regulate them. You know, most people's experience was, you know, either you didn't really feel it or you felt way too much. And the labels on edibles at the time in dispensaries were completely arbitrary. Like, you know, you get a brownie, it's like, how strong is this brownie? And it would say, it's like, it's 10 skull and crossbones strong. You know, they're like, well, that seems scary, but I don't know what that means. And so we started this trade association, got all the edibles manufacturers together, the big ones in California, and met at Steep Hill Labs in Oakland. And they were like one of the first labs that was testing for THC potency. Because it wasn't required, almost nobody did it. And so when we called them and we're like, hey, we want to start a trade association, and the first rule of trade association fight club is you have to test every batch of edibles. And they're like, that sounds amazing. You know, what do you need? You can use our facility. And so that is why, you know, today it doesn't say skull and crossbones for your potency, but, you know, 10 milligrams Delta 9 THC per gummy or per chocolate bar or root beer, whatever you're buying.
Yeah.
And so when I met Reggie and he's testing psilocybin in Oakland, you know, like the first lab, it just felt really full circle or deja vu, you know? And so I just wanted to talk to all their scientists and even just understand. I was like, so if I eat a gram of psychedelic mushrooms, what is the variance of my experience? What is the possibility of the variance of my experience? You know, can I, is it going to be like 50% stronger, 100% stronger? They're like, well, based on the mushroom samples we've tested, you know, it could be 20 times as strong. Yeah. You know, if you're talking about a 0.1 psilocybin or 2% psilocybin, right? Like you know, extreme examples of the scale there. But it made me, you know, immediately realize, that testing is going to be a natural part of, you know, the regulation and even just like legitimizing mushrooms. You know, like if you, you take them and you have a different experience every time, or you know, worse, like, you know, have something that's like too much for somebody, then, you know, I fear the same sort of thing, like with CBD. Well, they're going to have a negative experience. They write it off as a good medicine for them. And then, you know, maybe they, you know, suffer depression the rest of their life or something. Right. And so my whole career has been about like legitimizing plant medicine by really treating it like medicine, in that you're measuring the actives and, you know, everybody's like tolerance and you know, potency needs are different, but once you like dial in yours and you have a product or a brand or whatever that, you know that this is the right dosage for your like perfect experience, that's when, I mean, I think the real work starts, right? And the integration and, you know, working on yourself and letting the mushrooms work on you too.
Yeah. Thanks to Oakland HiFi out there that they're doing that research and keeping that data. Cause I mean, without that, I mean, we can't move forward, because someone could take like a gram of an Enigma and then take a gram of Golden Teachers. And that's two completely experiences, different experiences. So.
Yeah. So yeah, that's, I mean, the most time consuming thing of any of these emerging industries is education. Right. And I think that means like a lot of times you got to have that 101 sort of conversation 100,000 times. You know, will CBD get me high? No. Well, you know, will lion's mane make me hallucinate? No. You know, but it's worth it. You know, and I think, and it's people like you, people like me, Gwyneth Paltrow talking about mushrooms on her Goop show. And, you know, collectively, you know, it's just permeating the culture more and more.
Definitely, definitely. So, Robert, tell us what else you got going on, any other events coming up, where they can find your stuff. That way they can start following you and MicroBoost.
Yeah, thank you. It's microboost.com is our website at MYCRO Boost. And it's kind of the name is kind of if you know, you know. It's designed to, not only be good for your health, but it will boost your microdose. Paul Stamets recommends some niacin B3 and lion's mane with a psilocybin microdose. So obviously you don't need to take psilocybin for the mushroom coffee to taste good and be good for your gut health, your brain health, your immunity. But they do pair really nicely together. And we write a lot of blogs on the website about the benefits of each different type of mushroom, the benefits of the coffee. And our Instagram is at MicroBoost. This year, I've really committed to doing a lot more kind of behind the scenes footage and adventures on the road at these speaking events and stuff. So that should be hopefully a entertaining follow for people. And like you mentioned, Rolling Stone, I've got my 10th article, I think, coming out in the next couple of weeks. It's about deplatforming mushroom and psychedelic and cannabis influencers who are educating. Like Dennis, for example, that we're doing the panel together. Spent a couple of years building his Instagram account to 25,000 followers, and he makes satire parody videos. He's not like selling drugs or telling people to take them or anything. And overnight, Instagram took his account. And this is something that everybody deals with. We have a quote in there saying like it's kind of a rite of passage for cannabis and mushroom brands to have their account taken down. And so, yeah, just trying to educate people about that, get social media to at least like have more clear guidelines, because that's, I think, the most frustrating thing for these people. They spend years and, countless hours making the content and building their community, and then, they don't even really have an explanation of why it was taken away. But that's a really like kind of specific article coming out next. But the previous 9 articles have all been about my experience at these psychedelic conferences, working with Reggie, also about functional mushrooms. So if you just search like Robert Johnson, Rolling Stone, psychedelics, you'll find all of those articles there. And I have a book coming out. I'm aiming for this fall. The working title is The Great Mushroom Renaissance. Kind of
Nice.
just what I've been writing about for the past couple of years, just the kind of a snapshot of where we are in the transition from, a black market kind of illegal industry into this mainstream acceptance. And so I'm excited about that, and I'm going to be sharing a bunch of excerpts from that on our social as we go. If you join our mailing list, you'll get like digital download chapters and stuff as we go, because I really want it to be engaging. And for that, I really need people's feedback. And so, yeah, if your listeners check out MicroBoost social website and Rolling Stone, that's a good place to get in contact with me.
Nice. Awesome, Robert. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I'm sure my listeners will enjoy hearing the MicroBoost story. And you guys go follow the mailing list. Go join the mailing list on microboost.com. And we'll see you out at South by Southwest this year.
Oh, for sure. Looking forward to it, man. Thanks so much.
Cool,
This
man.
was a great call.
Yeah, awesome, Robert. You have a good day, man.
Thanks.
Stay shroomed.